It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and this week's show is coming to you from the Chilkoot Trail. I'm in Southeast Alaska with four friends, and we've just started hiking the trail from Dyea, which is just outside of Skagway. We've got our backpacks, we've got our permits, and we're heading over this historic trail, which was used by the Gold Rush Stampeders of 1897-1898 to get to Dawson City and the gold fields of the Yukon. And so for the next hour, I'll be taking you along, talking to my friends and rangers and people we meet along the way to learn about doing the Chilkoot Trail, summer of 2014.
Charles is in the field hiking 5 days with a group of four friends. The group logs 8 miles on the first day. They're sweaty, yet still exhilarated and fresh when they arrive at the first camp, Canyon City. Everyone's still getting to know each other.
I'm just going to introduce my friends I'm hiking with, Lois Epstein.
Hello.
Suzanne Mayla.
Hello.
John Bourgeois.
Hello.
And Neil McMahon.
Hey.
And I actually remembered everybody's name. So, how did this trip get organized? Because it's somewhat hazy to me as to whose idea it was in the first place.
So the person who organized the trip is not here with us, and we're sad about that, but we're happy to be here anyway. She is a friend of Suzanne and myself, and she's moving to North Carolina, so she had to leave Alaska.
Right. And so how do you know it's Margie, right?
Margie was my massage therapist, recommended to me by a girl I met mountain biking at Lost Lake.
And you know Margie. Lois, you know Margie through massage therapy.
That's right.
Right. So how do you know these people, Neil?
I know Suzanne.
So, woohoo!
So from Margie to Suzanne and from, okay.
And I'd met Lois twice, I believe. Randomly.
Professionally.
Yes, professionally.
And do you remember?
Randomly, professionally.
And do you remember meeting Neil?
Truth?
Yes.
No. Okay. No, you don't. You don't. It's fine.
So, and John is our one non-Anchorage person who's come all the way from Boston, right?
Yes, correct. And I was invited on the trip by Suzanne. I think there was an opening for some reason or another. So she, through our conversations, kind of asked if I wanted to join, and more than happy to. So it's been fun so far.
Yeah, so does any of you guys, nobody here has ever done this particular hike before. Do you know why sort of the impetus was it? I mean, for me, it was like Lois said, would you like to do the Chilkoot Pass? And I remembered that as a kid, I always thought it was amazingly cool that all these guys came to Alaska. This is sort of like how they got to Alaska. This is how Alaska was populated, like on this one, like, dirt trail. But did you, something you always wanted to do, Neil, or?
Yeah, it's been on my list of things to do in Alaska for pretty much most of my life. I always was hoping I would have some sort of large instrument on my back while I was doing it, but right now I'm
like a piano or something?
I'm pretty happy I don't have a piano on my back, but it had crossed my mind that that's how I should do it.
Uh-huh. What about you, John? Is this something you'd want to do for a long time? I know you've done a lot of mountain running and stuff.
No, you know, I really didn't know about this trail until it was mentioned to me by Suzanne. So I just personally love to hike. So anytime I can get an offer to come out and do something different. I have been here before back in 06, so I'm a little familiar with Alaska. So I couldn't help but jump at the chance. Yeah. So.
And you're talking about this Vermont 500. What is that?
Vermont 50.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's a race in Vermont, obviously. It's a 50-mile road race, 50-mile bike. 50K, and then there's a 50-mile relay all in one day. And I've talked about doing it this year.
Third, is that true?
Yes, Suzanne and I and my sister did it twice. The first time we did it, we came in third place. So it was a phenomenal day.
Yeah. Right, cool. And that's how you guys met, right, Suzanne?
Mm-hmm. We met through John's sister, who works for Ibex Equipment. And they put together a team and promised us gear, etc. Had to do it. And we've been friends ever since.
So did you have you like always wanted to do Chilkoot Trail, or is this just something that came available and you thought, hey, that sounds like fun?
My fourth year in Alaska, and it's been mentioned by several friends, people I've met. They said, you got to do it while you live here. And Margie, thank goodness for Margie. She made it happen.
Yeah. And you still have a little bit of a Boston accent. Not as much of it as John, but you can hear some of it.
Wait for the end of the trip. It'll get better.
Or a little bit more bourbon?
It'll get better. It'll get better with the bourbon. Yeah. It will. Yeah.
What about you, Lois? Have you wanted to do this for a long time, or is this sort of an opportunity?
I have wanted to do it for a long time. I've had friends that have done it, and I feel like I talked my way onto the trip that Margie and Suzanne had planned, and so that's how it happened for me.
I think it's interesting that it's, so far it's a pretty easy trail. It's pretty well maintained, you know. And then I was surprised that, like, this camp has got, like, a huge cabin here with a wood stove in it and all kinds of facilities. I mean, it's not exactly like your hard edge.
And
no roughing it, yeah.
Easy hiking, pretty easy, yeah, so far.
So, and we're supplied for bears, and there's some snow up in the past, but I mean, it's not really arduous in terms of a lot of hikes you could do. So Neil, have you done a lot of hiking around Alaska, like Resurrection and other trails?
Yeah, I did Resurrection Trail, but when I did it, I actually started in Seward, so I went through from Seward through a part of, I don't remember the name of that trail. And then there's this 15-mile section of no trail until you hit the Crescent Lake Trail. And then did the Crescent Lake Trail and then did the Resurrection Trail.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And it seems about comparable to that.
Yeah, the Resurrection part, definitely. Yeah, it's straightforward and you can kind of follow the trail the whole time. You don't have to do a whole lot of route finding.
Yeah. There's quite a bit of paperwork to be done if you're coming to do this trail. You have to buy a permit. You have to do it well in advance. There's only a limited number of permits. You have to start on the day that you say in the permit, go into Skagway, get your orientation, watch the film, find out what you're supposed to do. And I thought everybody was really nice. It didn't seem bureaucratic, but it was a lot more than you normally have to do to go on a trail hike. And then get a ride out to Dyea. It's a 9-mile drive to Dyea to get to the beginning of the trail.
We have Dave.
Dave Dyea.
You tell him, yeah, Dyea Dave, who told us how many times he was famous and for bringing 10,000 hikers to the trailhead, per se.
Yes.
10,000 trips. Yeah, he was interesting. Very informative.
And I noticed that at the beginning of the trail, there were a certain number of people who had guides who I think maybe were off those big cruise ships we saw at Skagway. You know, they were maybe hiking in a mile or two. But it wasn't a crowded trail. We only ran into a couple of parties.
Friends, yeah. Friends of mine that I live with, my housemates. We ran into them.
And I also noticed people had very, very white shoes, which is a hallmark, I think, of any sort of cruise ship, is that somehow you have to have very, very white shoes.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. So,
I have something.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I thought the funniest part of the orientation was when the woman who was talking to us told us the differences about Canada and the U.S. portions of the trail, and the Canadians supply firewood, but the Americans supply toilet paper.
Right, and she said that a lot of the toilet paper ends up in Canada because people swipe it and carry it over the trail.
Smuggle, I think, would actually be a good way to put
that's
it.
Right. Yes. And also the different ways of washing your dishes, that you were supposed to wash your dishes in a different way in each country.
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's different nationalities, I guess.
Capitalism versus socialism. I think that's how that could be summed up.
Yeah, here we just throw the stuff in the river.
Just throw it in the wet river. It's totally fine. Socialism, you have like a very set place where you have to put it.
A common place.
Exactly.
A common place.
And then it's dealt with properly.
Well, one of the things is this the way we've set this up, we've got 4 nights, 5 days to cover, 33 miles?
Yeah.
So that's really not, that's, today was only 7 miles. Tomorrow's like 4 or 5 miles. So we got in today at about 3 o'clock. Tomorrow we can start really late. We'll get in early. And John was supposed to bring the Bananagrams.
John,
I wonder if you could tell us, John, about like where the Bananagrams are.
I'm never going to live this down. This is going to be like all over Facebook. The trip was great, but John forgot the Bananagrams.
Yeah. Now it'll be all over public radio as well.
Yes.
And no one's going to want to hike with me.
Well, what do we got? We got.
This is gonna be what, 210 on Thursday?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's gonna be a long week.
So we got cards, we've got like chess, and we've got bourbon and what else? Baileys.
Dry whiskey.
Dry. Yeah.
So we should be able to entertain ourselves. Yeah, tons of food.
After a good night's rest, the group hits the trail for day two with a bounce to their step. It's been an easy day, covering less than 5 miles.
Okay, we finished day two, and we're now in sheep camp, which is the day before we go over the actual Golden Stairway. And so it's like a 4 to 5 mile hike today. It was like a gain of elevation, but it's really pretty. Lots of moss and suspension bridge and stuff. I mean, I thought it was a gorgeous, gorgeous hike.
Rivers.
And so I was surprised that we haven't seen very many people out hiking, and I finally realized that's because everybody's hiking the same direction, right? Because there's a lot of people here. And like Neil, you were talking up some of the people in the camp last night. Who did you meet?
I met several Canadians from Alberta, out in the plains. But they'd been all over, and I was impressed by the extent that they'd actually been hiking around. Even not here, but yeah, nice folks.
Yeah, and there's some people from Orlando, Florida this morning who were hiking through. I don't know, it seems like at first I thought that these stages were pretty short, but now it kind of seems nice. I mean, what do you guys think about doing it in four nights?
For what it takes to get here?
Yeah.
You may as well enjoy it. But today's hike was a little more challenging, but it was a little more fun, too, I think, than the first day. Prettier, more variety, more texture, the rivers, the frozen river. We hung out there for a while, John and I.
That was
beautiful.
That was beautiful, the frozen river. And I think, again, coming from Boston, taking the 4 days to do the hike is certainly well worth it, considering I may never get back to this hike, this particular hike again, so a lot of fun.
Yeah. I was... really surprised to come along that far on the trail and then run into an interpretive sign. You know, you're like used to seeing an interpretive sign on a little nature trail, and here one is out in the middle of nowhere, basically. And we also took that little side trail over to Canyon City, which apparently at one time was the actual city. I mean, there was a picture of it that there was like a hotel and there's different businesses there, and it was only there for like 2 years, and it was completely abandoned, and there's nothing left except for this big boiler that was huge. It was like the size of a truck. And they brought it up to build a tram. And then by the time they built the tram, it was only operated for 2 months before the gold rush was over. Which is interesting to think all this happened really, really fast. You know, it's just not something that lasted a long time. And then people have been going over the trail for now 115 years since then. Any thoughts, Lois? I see your...
Well, the historic stuff is great, but I'm actually looking in the direction I think is the pass, and the scenery is starting to change, too. It's starting to get, you see above tree line, you see the snow patches, and so it's getting exciting to follow the route that's on the license plates.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I like how, I mean, the first part of it was, like, pretty much totally flat, the first 7 or 8 miles. It's a couple of bumps, and then... Today we started gaining some elevation. I guess we gained about 1,000 feet overall. Mm-hmm. And now we can see these big granite, sort of granite mountains around us. And I can see that like tomorrow we'll probably be going up really steeply. Yeah.
The gentleman here said the steep section, it's 1,000 feet and half a mile vertical gain. And that's the worst of it. And then you're up and over.
Yeah, that's pretty steep. Yeah.
But overall, it's 2,500 feet. Climbing from here to the pass.
Top or to the pass?
To the top, and there's supposed to be a warming hut on the Canadian side. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That'll be pretty challenging, yeah. I mean, it feels like it's, in a way, it's just like a regular trail hike. I mean, it's not like outrageously different from other trail hikes I've done. It's like there's no special gear issues. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just using basically running shoes, and that's been fine. You know, we'll see later. They talked about fording streams, but every stream has had a big beautiful bridge on it, and and all the muddy spots have been built up. They've done a really good job of building up the trail.
I feel the same way. It's well done, being so far out.
But, Charles, you're not mentioning you're carrying a pole that has a little mini ice axe on top, so we're keeping that in reserve in case we need it and things get slippery at the top.
Carrying it but haven't used it. I'm afraid this is going to be the opposite of the bananagrams. Like, we needed the bananagrams and don't have them. We have the pole ice axe, but we don't need it.
I also figured that the ice axe might also just be used if somebody gets out of control.
There you go.
If we can't activate the bear spray, we can always throw the ice axe.
Not much wildlife. I mean, I saw a little bit of bear scat, but that's been about it. We saw some woodpeckers.
Woodpeckers and squirrel.
Yes.
That's it.
That's really about all I've seen so far. So, which probably isn't a bad thing, too.
Yeah. All right.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. Charles Woolforth is recording from the Chilkoot Trail, where he and his group have been hiking for 2 days. The morning of the third day, the group takes on the Golden Staircase. It's a steep climb over large granite boulders to the top of the pass. This is where the trail crosses into Canada. And this was the most difficult part of the trail for the gold rushers of the late 1800s. At Sheep Camp, Park Ranger Liz Blakely gives hikers a safety briefing and a rundown of what to expect over the pass.
So, I'm going to run down some safety things for tomorrow. Let's start off with weather. Everybody always asks me what's the weather going to be tomorrow. We're in a coastal rainforest. It's going to rain. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But there is rain projected tomorrow, a high of 58, a low of 45. If you're Canadian, I'm sorry, you'll also have to adjust that in your head. I can't do Celsius on the run. So as you're traveling up the pass tomorrow, expect fog, expect mist. The stairs are going to be slippery. The creek crossings are slippery. I might have slipped and fallen in yesterday. Might have happened. No witnesses, though, to attest to it one way or another. So mind your footing as you go tomorrow. Speaking of footing, snow bridges. That's probably my primary safety concern for everybody here is snow bridges. So snow bridges occur when the water travels underneath snow, or it can be a rock as well. Like a dark colored rock warms up faster than the snow above it, and it pretty much just rots out the snow. So as you're walking along, it looks solid on top, but it can be totally rotted out underneath. So when you're in transition zones from the dirt to snow, please be very careful and mind your footing. Kind of take a look underneath, see if it's all rotted out or not. I've knocked out as many as possible, but I can't knock out all the trail. Speaking of snow, how about some avalanches? You need to be up tomorrow morning and traveling up the trail at 6 a.m. Okay, so that's boots on dirt, moving up the trail at 6. That's not rolling out of your sleeping bag, getting some coffee, walking up the trail at 6 a.m. Now, I say that, we're not concerned so much about the avalanche danger on the U.S. side. For the first hour or two tomorrow morning, I'll be groggy and be like, Liz, you're crazy. There's nothing here. It's not going to slide. Yeah, it's not going to slide on the U.S. side. We're concerned about the Canadian side. So once you get up to the pass tomorrow, you're going to get up to this nice warming shelter, and it's going to be really tempting to take off your boots and hang out there for several hours, take a nap. Please don't. Warm up, take a break, catch your breath, grab some lunch, and then keep moving. We really want you through the Canadian avalanche zones near Crater Lake. Before the sun has a chance to sit on it and bake it. Yes, it will still bake it through the clouds. So that's our primary concern. We have had avalanches come down and cover the trail with up to 10 feet of debris all the way through mid-July in years past. So it is a real concern. On the trail, we also have bears. We have black bears and brown bears. If you're from the lower 48, you might call a brown bear a grizzly bear. And they do travel up and down the trail because it's the easiest way for them to travel. It's not because they're following you. It's just easier for them as well if they don't have to bushwhack. So in regards to that, please travel in a group. If you are in a group, stay in a group. Don't leave anybody behind. Make noise as you travel down the trail. It doesn't really matter what kind of noise. It just lets the bear know that you're on your way.
With a safety briefing under their belts and a good night's sleep, the group sets out for the pass the morning of their third day on the trail. The hike is foggy and wet and cold. It takes them 4 hours to ascend 2,500 feet to the top of the pass, where they meet a Canadian park ranger, Christine Hedgecock. It's been a wet day, and the sight of her warming hut is a welcome one.
We've made it over the Chilkoot Pass, and we've made it into Canada, and the Canadian flag was flying over the station here. And then the warden staying in the station brought us some hot water for tea, which was like more than I ever expected. So are you just here just making sure everybody makes it over okay?
I'm just checking today how people are doing. It's quite stormy up here, and it's a foggy day, and it's good to get a head count of where everybody is, and the groups are staying together and taking care of one another, hopefully. Yeah, which seems to be how it's happening today.
Uh-huh. So were we the last ones to make it over? Have you got the full head count?
Well, actually, I came to ask you if you had seen anybody else climbing behind you. Were there any other tents left at sheep camp?
We didn't see anybody actually hiking behind us, and you could see it pretty far back. So.
Well, I'll go and take a look with the binoculars, and I'm around here all day, and I'll see how people are doing. Is anyone else coming? Yeah. We're not always here, but when we're here, we're looking around to see how things are going.
So how much time do you spend up here? Do you sleep up here or just come up to check on things?
We have a small patrol cabin up here, and I work on a team of five. And we rotate and take turns patrolling in this direction. And our main base camp is at Lake Lindeman.
Oh, great. Okay. And then it's like a 2 week on, 1 week off sort of job? Or how does that look?
It's 9 days in the field and 5 days off.
Oh, that sounds nice. And do you live in Whitehorse?
Most of the crew lives in Whitehorse or Carcross. We're Yukoners, mostly working on this team. Yeah.
So what sorts of problems do people run into? I mean, you have people getting lost, you have to go look for them, that kind of thing?
Yeah, people get disoriented in the fog, and then they come report that somebody's missing from their group, and then we figure out where to look for them. And then some people slip and fall. You know, every step has to be a careful step, and I think that's mostly what people are doing. And then ahead of you now, you have 2 kilometers of an avalanche zone to traverse. And we want people to be aware of that and move through quickly and early in the day before the sunlight, before the warmth. You know, it's Crater Lake is like a basin, and it gets lots of radiation aloft on the mountaintops. Mm-hmm. And in July of 1987, there was a large slide that happened at Crater Lake. And it wasn't, you know, we didn't expect it, but it released from a glacier high up on the mountains and came right down into the valley.
Was anyone hurt?
Nobody was hurt. There were 4 people that were near miss. Father and son stopped to talk to somebody, so that was friendship. And the other 2 were on their honeymoon, so that was love, and that saved them. Friendship and love.
There you go.
At the Canadian warming hut, the group talks about their ascent up the pass over a hot cup of tea.
Yeah, I thought I was surprised that there wasn't more of a trail. I guess I should have known that, but I was surprised it was just like scrambling over rocks. That was okay, and it didn't last too long.
We were grateful for the snow trail. Yeah. That helped make things easier with snow on the other side, and it just booped right out. It was great.
Yeah. Anybody experience any fear of heights or vertigo or anything?
Just a minute when the wind was blowing my pack. And after we tightened up my pack, I was good.
Yeah.
Just one moment, I had to stop and regroup.
Yeah, I got the feeling like with the pack would be the one sort of variable that unless you stay low and lost, you could lose your balance and tumble. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't get killed, I think. You'd just sort of tumble down a little ways.
Yeah.
So I felt like if it was totally snowy, I would really want crampons and an ice axe because it would be steep enough that if you slipped, you'd slide a long way. What do you think?
Yeah. I agree completely. you need this crampons, ice axe, maybe be roped together, and yeah, it'd be a lot more treacherous if we had snow like that. Mm-hmm.
But these, but these stampeders, they didn't have that kind of material, right? They just like walked right up through the snow, it looks like.
They did have crampons.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yes. You can find rusty ones here and there in the rocks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So they were thinking about that, and then they had somebody was cutting stairs, and that was the golden stairs, making steps for them to go up.
Up the snow?
Yes. And then if everybody's in lockstep together, going up and up and up, you know, it's forming a staircase.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a hiker, though, that came... he was close to 80, and he was traveling with his family, and they came hiking up the Golden Stairs, and it was snowy, and it was very steep pitch. It was about 68 degrees on the steepest part of the snow. It was amazing. You felt like you were just falling backwards trying to get up. And we were cutting steps that day, but anyway, they were beneath us, and we were working our way down, and then they slipped. And they had their GPS on them being tracking their distance and the speed with which they had traveled between Canyon City and Sheep Camp, and they still had it on. And it actually tracked their fall down the Golden Stairs. And it was close to 39 miles per hour. And they had a few scrapes and bumps on them and did very well.
Wow.
They were helivacked out of here. One, because of the fellow's age, and the other man, he sustained a hairline fracture in his leg.
Mm. When was that? Just recently?
That was about 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and the number of people who come through here must be one of the things that mean that would cause you to have more incidents and issues. And the ranger down in the sheep camp was saying that one of the main things is that people will come and it may be their first backpacking trip. You know, they haven't really done anything before. And so if that was the case, I think it would be pretty challenging.
Well, it's kind of the trail. You learn everything you need to know about backpacking and more.
Yeah.
And whether you want to do it again. Yeah. So there's a lot of newcomers to backpacking that come here, or people that don't do very much backpacking that show up. And most everybody amazed me. They have a great time, and they accomplish something they never thought they could accomplish before. Uh-huh. Yeah,
I like the camaraderie of the people hanging around the camp, too. I mean, I thought normally when I'm outdoors, I would like to be in as much solitude as possible, but this is a sort of different experience, sort of a group experience, and it's kind of cool. I mean, that's some interesting people.
But it's reminiscent of what the people who climbed during Gold Rush did. It gives you a little bit of that feel where you see people climbing ahead of you and sometimes behind you.
I know, but I have this feeling that they were all so kind of greed-crazed and so struggling so hard to get over that it must be kind of miserable, or maybe they helped each other out. But
maybe the social scene was a lot worse then than it is now.
Yeah, we're not
even more whiskey.
Even yeah, more whiskey,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's not a terribly cold day, but there's certainly plenty of chill out there between the wind and the wet fog and the sweat. You work up a sweat going up there.
Yeah, we were feeling pretty good when we made it over the top and said, hey, we made it. We're in Canada.
Yeah. Beautiful. It's great.
All right.
Can we sing now? Oh, Canada?
I know the first two words.
Take your time going down. It's still a steep pitch down the snow here. Dig your heels in, make careful steps. So you have to descend towards Crater Lake.
All right.
I'll get my poles out.
Yeah, it's really heavy poles.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org. This week, Charles Woolforth is recording from the Chilkoot Trail. Charles and a group of four friends have made it over the top of the Golden Staircase, and they arrived at camp for the night. It's been a 7-hour day.
So we've reached Happy Camp, which is the first camp beyond the Golden Staircase and the summit. And sun came out, I think because of the coastal mountains, there's a rain shadow, and so it was much nicer on the way down from the summit to this camp, which is 4 miles away. And just amazing, amazing alpine scenery, beautiful crater lake, and this exposed granite bedrock, rounded mountains, and lots of hiking through snow, and kind of went back to spring. The snow was just getting off the plants and running down into the rivers, and so a gorgeous walk. Anyway, so now we're sitting in the cabin here at Happy Camp, and people are playing cribbage, and Lois is going to read some of the comments from the cabin log. It's here. So go ahead, Lois.
This is from July 4th, 2013. What lengths will two moms go to escape from their combined 7 children? Hike the Chilkoot. After a crazy 2 days hiking some crazy terrain, including planks across swamps, huge boulders, stream crossings, and the quote-unquote golden staircase, which is actually not stairs, by the way, our legs are quivering. We can't even believe that we did what we did, and we collapsed at Happy Camp and promptly had the best uninterrupted naps in the sunshine ever. Tomorrow, on to Bear Loon Lake. Woot! Heather and Michelle from Faro, look it up, Yukon.
All right.
Here's another one. I am so proud of us all for reaching the summit. I wouldn't replace the feeling of reaching the top for anything. Love you all. Molly Lippitt. And this is from July 11th, 2013. It's been a pure delight being out here on the trail. This is day 8 for me, and I've been painting up a storm in rain and shine. I can't get over how beautiful it is. Best artist in residence ever. Thank you. Cassandra Loomis, Annandale, Virginia, artist in residence. September 10th, 2013, first timer. Did you ever get a stupid idea and then do it? For years, I've wanted to do the Chilkoot Trail alone as a getaway from the real world. I had hoped to do it in the summer, but instead found myself here on September 10th. When you are alone, well, it's different. I found lots of fresh bear tracks, but was very concerned when I saw a fresh bear dump that was still slightly warm. I soldiered on, yelling every 30 seconds, and was thrilled to reach the scales. Now I find myself writing this by candlelight as a gold-seeking Klondiker undoubtedly did so many years ago. It feels about 2 or 3 degrees Celsius tonight, and my imagination is running wild, thinking of how those poor souls deprived themselves in their gold quest.
It was hard going for the Klondikers. Many came from places like Chicago or New York or even Australia, thirsting for the promise of gold, but woefully unaware of the climate and landscape that faced them. There was an economic depression going on in the rest of the country at the end of the 1800s. 3 prospectors struck gold on the Klondike River in the Yukon Territory and arrived back in Seattle in 1897 with about 60 others and a ton of gold stuffed in chests and gunny sacks. The newspapers went crazy, and the gold rush was on, with as many as 40,000 people from all over the world rushing to Alaska, even the mayor of Seattle. All at once, Alaska gained its non-native population, and its modern history began. Back on the trail, Charles and the group depart from Happy Camp and hike along to Lindeman Lake, where they find a small museum.
We had a remarkably beautiful hike today. from Happy Camp down along the Crater Lake and Deep Lake and Lindeman Lake. Views and the scenery was just extraordinary of these alpine lakes in bedrock country with rivers running between them and deep canyons, very reminiscent of the high country at Yosemite in the Sierra. So and then we arrived at Lindeman, and the Canadians have put up a bunch of cultural displays here. Right now we're in a wall tent where there is an excellent kind of museum explaining the area. A couple of things that surprised me. One is that there were a whole bunch of towns along the Chilkoot Trail that lasted a year or two and then disappeared, which were substantial in size. And here at Lindeman, where there, of course, is nothing now but a campground, there were 4,000 people living at one time. And there's all kinds of artifacts and pieces of metal on the ground and all over the place. And one of the facts that I learned here in the museum is that this area was controlled by the first people of this area by force. And when there was an attempt by the Hudson Bay Company to set up a trading post in 1848, a party of Chilkat Tlingits actually destroyed the trading post and chased the British out. And for another 25 years, the Tlingits controlled trading through the Chilkoot Pass, and were really only overwhelmed when the gold rush came along. And a lot of really interesting stuff. So it is very much a historic journey. And Lois, what were you were saying about the animals?
Yeah, we weren't sure how much animals were used to pull the goods up over the pass and down the Yukon. And from this display, we see that there are dogs and goats and oxen and pack horses that were used in some pretty vertical conditions with those pack horses. It was surprising to us.
Yeah, and the goats look just like a dog team. It's like a team of goats pulling a couple of sleds. And so they got to these lakes, and then they built boats, or they had brought boats over the pass, and we found the frame of one abandoned boat in the heather. And then I guess they would have to portage between the lakes, because the river is pretty wild between these lakes. So anyway, so we're at Lindeman, and we're going to head on down the trail to the next campsite, because it's still kind of early in the day to be stopping.
One more interesting thing that I'm getting from seeing this exhibit is just the scale of the industrialization that occurred here, because you'd see little bits and pieces, just artifacts along the way, and not even continually. And you come and you see these photographs, and you find out this incredibly beautiful lake was just populated with people and shipbuilding and stores and restaurants. And it wasn't just one spot. It was all over.
It's not long after leaving the Lean-To Museum that the group reaches the end of the trail. They've hiked 33 miles together. And after having lunch at the train depot at Lake Bennett, the hiking portion of the trip is officially over for Charles and the gang. They board the train to Skagway.
Yeah, they don't want the smelly people in the main part of the train, right? So we're on the
caribou.
Oh, caribou up ahead.
Which way?
He's coming out for us.
Nice one too.
Hey.
Oh, look at him go! Yeah.
See
you
there.
Oh, there you go.
Big antler.
How long get up here?
My battery is dying. Give me your camera.
Like, what the hell is that? What have I gotten myself into? In the water?
Wow, beautiful. Beautiful caribou.
That's awesome. I didn't realize they dropped so low.
So, So we're on the White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad headed down from Fraser at the border now into Skagway. Beautiful weather, lovely pothole lakes in the granite, and seen a couple of black bears and a caribou, and you can stand out between the cars, which makes it a really fun ride. It's a $95 ticket for hikers to get from Bennett to Skagway, plus $15 for the lunch, which is a hearty beef stew and a piece of pie and coffee. It's been a really fun day. We had a great hike in the morning, and now we're having this great train ride, which is really a good way to finish a trip. On the train ride down to Skagway, and I was just wondering if you guys thought this was sort of what you expected in terms of the Chilkoot Trail, or any differences from sort of what you were given to expect.
I was surprised by the diversity of the trail. I guess I hadn't really looked at it very closely at all, so I was just surprised that I wasn't surprised that we started off in the temperate rainforest, but going up and getting up into the upper subalpine areas and the really rocky areas of the pass, and going down into the, I mean, it was pretty barren up at the going down off the summit, and then going further down, just getting drier and drier and drier. And as what we're going through right now, it really reminds me of kind of the higher parts of the Rockies. Yeah. Really dry pines, hemlocks,
sand.
Yeah.
Sand. For 33 miles, a huge diversity of ecosystems. I agree with Neil. In such a short space, we saw everything. From icy, awful weather and rainforest to this dry, it's a big bang for your buck.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised by that. I also thought it was going to be more historic and more like the emphasis on that. And there was obviously a lot of interpretation, but really what was grabbed me was that the scenery was gorgeous, and like you say, the ecosystems changing from one to the other.
Yeah, that I thought was great. I thought we might see a little bit more wildlife than we did.
Yeah.
I think I saw a squirrel and
we saw a toad.
A dead toad.
Oh, we saw one alive.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Some woodpeckers.
Yeah, it was dead. Yeah, one woodpecker, a few Arctic tern. But that was kind of it for wildlife, which was a little bit disappointing. But
it's pretty well made trail. You know, there was a stone steps on the American side, and it's pretty well maintained. And then you got up into the Golden Staircase, and it was just like a jumble of rocks, which I thought was. I mean, I kind of thought that would be the whole thing because you hear so much about how arduous it is, but actually, it's really well maintained, and the camps are nice, and
It was one of the most luxurious camping trips that I've ever done, where I actually still slept in my own tent. Yeah, latrines and a place to cook, and there was always a place to get out of the rain if that was needed, or out of the wind. Yeah, it was pretty cush.
Yeah, and yet it didn't feel, I mean, maybe it's because it's early in the season, it was only about half full. But I think even if it was full with 40 or 50 people, it would not be overwhelming because there's lots of space and everybody's going the same direction.
Right.
I thought it was great, and we have to give a plug to Christine at the top of the pass.
Yeah, wasn't she nice?
Four big thermoses of hot water. She's gangbusters in our book. I think she really was great.
Yeah.
It was cold.
I loved having all the rangers along and our artists in residence. It just added this whole different dimension to it.
Right. And a whole bunch of Canadians.
Yeah.
Makes it a lot friendlier.
Do you guys think you'd do it again?
I would do it again in a heartbeat, but a day shorter.
Yeah.
The piece I would cut short would be a front piece. I would cut the rainforest section short by a day, maybe hike straight to, what's the camp?
Sheep camp.
Sheep. I would hike to sheep in a long day.
Yeah.
To avoid that one rainy, extra rainy day, and maybe take a little more time on this side. Something we don't see living in Alaska all the time. We don't really get to enjoy so much of this nice arid.
I know the Canadian side was really the more beautiful, more surprising part of it. Yeah. We might have been influenced by the fact it was sunny and warm as well. But
it tends to be, though. The weather pattern tends to be much nicer on this side.
Yeah, I agree with you. It might have been one day extra, except for the first time is probably good. And, you know, I wasn't looking forward to being over. I was really having a good time. Got a nice swim in this morning, and yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I personally would do it again, but I would recommend that other people do it. It's not very frequent that I go and redo something I've already done. But it was a beautiful trail, and it was, I think, easily accessible. Well, not exactly accessible, but easily done. It wasn't too arduous. And
lots of support.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tom. Sure.
Off the trail, group members go their separate ways and settle back into normal life. It's not too long before Charles finds one more piece of trail magic that he can't help but follow up on.
Getting back to Anchorage, I'd heard about a runner who had covered the whole trail ahead of us in one day, and I was pretty impressed with that. I guess more and more people are trying this, and it just so happens that the guy who did it is also a member of the legislature, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, who represent Sitka and communities in Southeast Alaska. And so I called him up in Sitka to just find out what that experience was like. So thanks for being with us, Jonathan.
Absolutely, Charles. I love to talk about the Chilicoot Trail.
Yeah, so you must be a pretty experienced mountain runner to take on something like this.
Yeah, I enjoy longer distance running and endurance athletics, I guess you could say, and also being out in really amazing parts of Alaska and, well, I guess Canada too, and the Chilicoot Trail definitely qualifies.
Yeah, so I mean, you're not the typical legislator in terms of your age and physique. Are you the youngest legislator that we've ever had in Alaska?
Not ever. There were I think John Sackett and Terry Gardner were both, I forget how many months younger.
Okay.
We're all in our early 20s when we first got into the legislature.
Yeah. So, you know, when you're in the trail center there in Skagway talking to the National Park Service about covering the trail, they actually have a sign that says, don't try to do it in one day because, if you get in trouble, you won't have enough gear with you, and so they don't. I guess they don't want to encourage people to do that. What inspired you to do it? What made you think it was a good idea?
Well, I hiked it twice. Once with my family when I was really young, and once when I was a little bit older by myself, and enjoyed it terrifically both times. And I heard about runners and. As I got more and more into longer distance running and found myself doing 20 or 30 mile runs, the Chilicoot Trail was very much sort of in the realm of possibility as a result. And it was something that I'd wanted to do for some time. And so I ended up doing it with one of my closest friends who's from Haines and also a runner. He ran D1 in college and now he's running a club in San Francisco while I was getting his master's. And we'd had it on our bucket list and we meant to do it last year, but we couldn't find the time. And he was back in Alaska for a week this year. So we went up to Skagway for a day and did it. And we were both in fairly good shape. And I knew the route pretty well because I'd done it twice. And we did all our homework beforehand and it worked out really well. It was an amazing experience.
I'm thinking that fairly good shape is probably an understatement, but I'll let that go. So it seems like you've got some distance to cover, 33 miles, which is, you know, for a marathon runner, it's a, you know, another 7 miles, not totally out of the question. But then you've also got the Golden Staircase, which is, you can't really run. You're climbing over these huge boulders, right? How did it, what are the toughest parts of the run? And, you know, did that, was that a real challenge?
Yeah, I mean, it's you're right. It's not just 33 miles flat horizontal. There's a significant vertical element to it. And then the terrain itself isn't always the equivalent of, say, cinder track. We had both done a couple of, maybe not in our own best interest, a couple of runs in the few days immediately prior to.
Oh, no.
And so the getting over Chilkoot Pass and the Golden Stairs, we both sort of commented to each other as we were doing that our quads were feeling a little bit sapped, and I think our pace definitely subsided a little bit. I mean, we were taking splits and we kind of had target times. We had to get through the trail in a certain amount of time to catch the train, otherwise we'd be stranded, and we kind of had goal times that we felt were reasonable. We were ahead of pace until that. And then also, it was pretty early in the season, so there's a lot of snow on the Canadian side of the trail after the pass, and snow can cut both ways, but I think that definitely sort of slowed down the route a little bit.
Yeah, soft snow, you couldn't go fast through it. I found you were sinking into it in a lot of cases, and also a little bit treacherous in some places where if you slipped, you'd fall quite a ways in the soft snow.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, it's almost like sand a little bit. You know, you lose a lot of your momentum and energy because it kind of absorbs it.
So what kind of, mile pace were you doing? What was your goal on the flat part?
Gosh, I haven't broken it down yet.
Oh, okay. So what was your total time over the 33?
We did it in 6 hours and 24 minutes, and we figured that 6 hours, 30 minutes was a reasonable goal.
Excellent.
And, I hadn't done a ton of research on the times. I know that Jeff Rose, who's an ultra marathoner, who used to live in Alaska, and now he lives in Boulder, and he's a world-class athlete. He set course records on, gosh, seems like every 100-mile race that he ran. He's got sort of the unofficial fastest time on the Chilkoot, which is 5 hours, 29 minutes. So we figured if we added a good hour to that, that would be a ballpark goal time, which turned out to be accurate.
Sounds like an excellent time, yeah. So did you have to start early in the morning to get through that avalanche zone? One of the things that they advise hikers is that you need to sort of be through this avalanche zone by noon, and if you're starting a considerable distance away, I guess you'd have to start pretty early.
Yeah, we definitely started early. I mean, both for that and then also the train.
Train leaves at 2:10, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think on that particular day, it was coming at 11 or 11:30 a.m. So,
oh my gosh.
We were up at 3 a.m. and we were on the trail, at the trailhead by 3:51 a.m., I think it was. And we were booking it from there. So it was a very early alpine start.
And so going around the solstice is a good idea because otherwise you'd just kill yourself in the dark.
Well, I guess this was just a few days before solstice, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's a little surreal running through the woods at 3:50 a.m. because it was, the visibility was not so much a factor, but,
Yeah, well,
it worked out well.
Fortunately, you didn't get any bears jumping you either. So, and then at the end, did you sit down to a bowl of stew, or was that not in the cards?
Unfortunately not. White Pass Yukon Route, the railroad that runs between Skagway and Carcross, we bought our tickets there, and they do have a hot lunch at their train depot.
That's delicious.
Carcross. And unfortunately, we were just feeling a little too frugal to spring the $20.
Oh, you're so cheap, yeah.
But when we got to car crash on the train, we sprung for a triple scoop ice cream cone, which was absolutely terrific.
So in terms of prepping for a mountain run like this, it would be applicable, I guess, to the Chilkoot Pass or any long-distance mountain run. Describe to me what you're carrying, because obviously you need to keep weight to the minimum, but you also need some calories along the way and hydration and any emergency supplies in case you have a problem. What do you carry?
Yeah, we kept it simple. We did iodine for water purification. We both had Camelbacks. We brought, I think we planned out our calories. I think we both had about 2,500 calories with us. And then we had a big, big breakfast at 3 a.m. So we were carrying a bunch of calories in our stomach. We brought an emergency space blanket for sort of an emergency situation, as well as an ACE wrap. We both had rain jackets, lightweight rain jackets for sort of insulation and weather protection. You know, beyond that, that might have been about the run of it.
Cool.
It was a pretty simple and also lightweight pack.
Well, it sounds like a cool adventure and probably inspiring a lot of listeners right now. I mean, our group took 5 days, which was a bit on the slow side, but we probably saw some more of the scenery and had more encounters with people. So two flip sides, the long and the short. So thanks so much for being with us, Jonathan Christ Tompkins. He's also a member of the Alaska Legislature, represents Sitka in the State House. Thanks so much for taking the call and telling us about your run.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Charles. Take care.
You've been listening to Outdoor Explorer on the Chilkoot Trail in Southeast Alaska. The music you heard during the show was from an acoustic tribute to O Brother, Where Art Thou, released in 2005 by Tribute Sounds. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Charles Wolforth reported from the trail, and I'm your guest host and producer, Monica Goki. Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect those of the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and to add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening today. We'll see you outside.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.